We will recall the top political news stories of the week in this edition of The Week in Review. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, November the 18th. Every Friday at this time, we invite two guests from different political perspectives to discuss the top state, national, and international issues in the news each week. And as you might expect, the effort to recall Governor Walker, as we just heard in state news, will top our list this hour. And we invite your comments, your questions, and suggestions for topics, too, at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, and you can tweet us on Twitter at Joy Cardine Show. There is lots to talk about, so let's welcome in our guests. Ruth Conniff is political editor of The Progressive Magazine. Good morning, Ruth.
Good morning.
And Margaret Farrow is the former lieutenant governor of Wisconsin, chair of Wisconsin Eye Broadcast Network. Her views here do not represent Wisconsin Eye. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Joy?
Good. Thanks to both of you for joining us. I am feeling better today. I had a little bug yesterday, but I'm glad to have recovered from that. Let's talk about, we just heard it in state news, the recall organizers, the coalition of people that are trying to recall Governor Walker, report that they have collected 50,000 signatures in the first 48 hours since it kicked off on Tuesday. Ruth Conniff, your reaction?
Well, I'm not surprised. I have been covering this, so I went to a lot of the training sessions where people were coming out to get trained to collect signatures. There was a huge party in Madison at a bar on State Street, and there were similar parties around the state on Monday night where people came out to sign petitions at a minute past midnight as soon as they possibly could. People are really energized. They're really excited. And, of course, you know, polls show that 58% of Wisconsinites will vote for recall. So it's not surprising to see that they're off to a big start.
Mm-hmm. And, Margaret Farrow, your reaction?
Well, I guess I'm not surprised also that the momentum right now is very high in the organization. I think either they are all students of or have read Saul Alinsky's book. They're following it almost to the letter in terms of the organizational side of it. And I think that, people have asked me, do you think it's going to succeed in terms of getting enough signatures? I imagine it will. Do I think there will be a successful election following that to take Governor Walker out of office? That is the question. I don't see that side, and I guess it's the Democratic side or something. I don't see them having a definite candidate yet who is in any way becoming the focal point or the spokesman or spokesperson for it. My problem is with recalls. I think Wisconsin is, you know, similar to only 18 other states. There's 19 in total that have some form of recall. And I think that with one vote, with one concept of political activity that was done, I don't think that's enough for people to be able to recall and upset the entire governing process that we have in the state of Wisconsin. Instead, it's saying we're going to watch your every move, and if you have a bad vote, in our opinion, we're going to pull you out of office. We've never had this before to this extent. We've had a few, as we recall, in the mid-90s, we had a recall. We had a recall against Senator George after his problems with the law, more so than political ones, and I find a real, real problem with recalls. Yeah. I think we have a process. All the Assembly, half the Senate will be elected next year again in 2012. The governor has several years to put together what he told people. I guess I have a problem in that the opposition has been saying he never told us he was going to do anything within the collective bargaining area. He told people he was going to balance the budget without raising taxes. He said that over and over. Anyone who knows beyond textbooks what goes on in the real world knows that 80 to 85% of the cost of public budgets is personnel costs. So if you're going to make a change to level the playing field and have the taxes be paying for what the government has to be doing, you're going to have to have done something to that side of the equation.
Let's let Ruth kind of react to that.
That's a lot of issues. I guess first, I would agree with Margaret that, you know, we're at stage one. So now, as far as a campaign and a candidate on the Democratic side, that has not happened. You see the, you know, possible candidates popping up at some of the, you know, for example, I saw Julie Wells, who's the forklift operator from Fort Atkinson, file the official papers to kick off the recall. On Tuesday, she gave a little speech at the recall office downtown in Madison and then walked up to the Government Accountability Board. And with her were Kathleen Falk, the former Dane County exec, and also Malin Mitchell, the head of the Firefighters Union Wisconsin. So there's, you know, they are potential candidates. I saw Dave Obey popped up at an event. John Erpenbach popped up at an event. But the thing that's really notable, I think, about the recall effort is exactly that it's not the Democratic Party. It's not, you know, contrary to Republican claims, big union money from out of state. I mean, this is really a neighborhood, you know, it's down to a block association level drive. And right now, one of the things that I think is kind of fascinating about the recall effort is it's really driven by a lot of regular citizens, and they are organizing themselves. You know, United Wisconsin is the group that is, you know, the PAC that is formed specifically for the purpose of recalling the governor and the lieutenant governor, but they only have four paid staff. Most of the people doing the work for recall around the state, and it's a huge, huge effort, are just volunteers who are energized because they disagree with Margaret about whether they expected Scott Walker to roll back public employees' bargaining rights. They found that outrageous, many of them were either not that interested in the governor's race or they even voted for Walker. But they found that to be a complete departure from Wisconsin politics and tradition and what they expected from Walker's campaign. So there's a lot of those folks. There are people like Wells herself, this Fort Atkinson forklift driver who's not in a union, wasn't actually affected by that budget repair bill herself directly, but she's got 12 grandchildren, and she's really worried about the school cuts. She doesn't like the idea of making historic cuts to Wisconsin's public school system. She's worried about the environment. She's worried about the rash of retirements from state government and the brain drain and just the dismantling of what she sees as sort of fundamental, important things about our state. So I think that's also interesting. And then on the issue of recall itself, you know, right now on Facebook and, you know, sort of all over the Internet, you can watch a video of Scott Walker, who himself first took off as this Milwaukee County exec in a recall election, where he does an extended ad praising recall and talking about it as a democratic force, how neighbors stood shoulder to shoulder, and, you know, what a great thing it was. So it's kind of funny to hear the criticism of recall, you know, when you're talking about a guy who won office for the first time in a recall election and also is on the record praising it. And I think rightly, because after all, you know, you can't just scrutinize politicians and say, okay, we're going to pull you out of office if you take one bad vote. You have to have... It's a very high bar. You have to have a large group of really energized citizens behind the effort, and that is what we see in Wisconsin, where, you know, we're going to see this huge rally downtown on Saturday. I think, you know, we're looking at a very, very large number of very energized citizens, just regular folks.
Let me take a call and then get Margaret Farrow to respond. Corey in Iowa County. Hi, Corey.
Hello.
Yes, your thoughts?
Yeah, I was just going to say the majority of society is overworked and, like she was saying, kind of the brain drain. And then, you know, the vote is close for Governor Walker, and he gets in, and the first thing he does is with the teachers union, and that's not what he preached on his campaign. Like, he didn't say, as soon as I get in, I'm going to do this.
Yeah, he said he was going to balance the budget, though, Corey.
I know, but that's pretty loose terms. I mean, if you're going to do something immediately and take advantage of something, you should really let the people have some kind of insight on that. I think it's just kind of a poor thing to do. It's shady, I guess you could say.
Yeah, Margaret Farrow, Corey didn't know, he says.
Well, I guess my concern, Governor Walker won in a very clear majority. He got the votes. Maybe the percentage wasn't a high enough one that in Corey's mind. I would remind him that 8 years prior to that, Governor Doyle won with 42%. He didn't get the majority of the voters. He won with a plurality, which was probably one of the lower amounts that a governor had won with in many years. And his first act coming out of his inaugural, or at his State of the State address very shortly afterwards was to tell the state he had just signed a perpetual and everlasting agreement with our tribes for certain things that took the state quite by surprise and subsequently was proved to be not unconstitutional when it was challenged in the Supreme Court. So I think we have governors historically who had done things that were an affront to some part of the people in the state, not to say that they were illegal. That was proved to be unconstitutional, at least. And I think this whole idea that people weren't prepared for the very strong steps that Governor Walker was going to take, the fact that for the first time in a long time we have a true balanced budget, that we are not raising taxes, that anyone who owns property that has to pay a property tax bill will see either a minimum of increase or leveling or possibly in many cases around the state, a decrease in property taxes. Fine, put someone new in if that's what you're proposing. What are they going to do to pay the bills in the manner in which they want to? School districts haven't been damaged to that extent. I would like to see the case of lost classes, lost teachers. A lot of the teachers that are gone, as we've seen in some recent a compilation of what really has happened that used to be done by the teachers union, and they didn't do it this year, so it was done within the administration, within the administration of DPI. A lot of those were the ones who left, who decided, I'm worried about my retirement, I'm well at an age that I could take the state number retirement, even though I'm nowhere near 62 or 65. They left, and so that is not that unusual. So I think we've had a lot of misrepresentation made of the facts along the way to this swelling up of emotion about Governor Walker.
Ruth Conniff?
Look, if you have kids in the Madison public schools, as I do, you know that every year there are deeper and deeper cuts that are really painful to parents and not just to teachers. I mean, we support our teachers, and it feels like a real slap in the face when they absorb the level of cut that they did. So in my school district, what happened is, for this year, and only for this year, we're not going to see the kinds of program cuts that parents really get up in arms about. And those are where, you know, you no longer have fourth and fifth grade strings. You no longer have after-school clubs. You no longer have art classes. You have, you know, a shared music teacher who's got a cart instead of a room. You know, you have that kind of thing going on year by year, you know, as schools across the state struggle with their budget problems. This year, the teachers absorbed the entire impact of the Walker budget cuts on themselves. They took pay and benefit cuts that accounted for the whole thing for one year. That was a massive slap at some people who work really, really hard with our kids and do a really important job. Next year, that's not going to be an option. And so we are looking at school closings. There are agonizing series of meetings every year about which schools might be closed, and there are parent groups who are up in arms about it. And around the state, really, it's the rural school districts that are the most affected. Because of low enrollment, they've been shrinking and shrinking. Kids are riding the bus for an hour each way to get to school. And, you know, in Luther Olson's district, where actually Luther Olson's own kids' school is closing, that was a big issue in the recall election against him there, because people hate to see their schools closed. And in rural areas, it's the heart of your town and your community, and it's really a big, big difference if there's not a football team, if there's not a school play, if kids are riding the bus for a couple of hours to get somewhere. And this is a very hot issue for very good reason in this state. And to say that, you know, that Walker has given schools the tools to have no impact, as he said in his, you know, his ad during the Packer game the other day, it's just not true. I mean, it's the biggest cut to the public education system in Wisconsin in state history. It's almost $1 billion. It's not going
to
be easy.
Let me hold you there. We're going to take a short pause, and we have lots of callers who have recall-related comments that we will have Ruth Conniff and Margaret Farrow discuss. Ruth Conniff is the political editor of the Progressive magazine. Margaret Farrow is the former lieutenant governor of Wisconsin. 1-800-642-1234 if you'd like to join us, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to The Week in Review this afternoon after 4. It's Your Views on the News with Ben Marins and his guest. So more talk about the news of the week during Your Views on the News after 4. We're talking with Ruth Conniff and Margaret Farrow about the top political, state, national, and international news stories of the week. And we're going to have to move along as we have lots of territory to cover. But let me ask you, Margaret Farrow, to respond to the Wisconsin Public Radio St. Norbert College Survey Center poll, which was released this week, that showed that 58% of Wisconsinites would vote to remove Governor Walker from office if the recall election were held today. Our survey analyst says that Governor Walker has lost support among Republicans from the spring. What's your response to that?
Well, I guess two things. The first thing is, historically, I have watched the St. Norbert's poll over the many years that I've been involved, interested in, now reflecting on these things. St. Norbert's uses students, as I understand the makeup of the poll, they use students to do the polling, and they run it over a much longer time than most of the more I would say a little more dependable number historically polls than theirs. They normally do not come out in the same breakout that many of the other polls that we've come to know and understand their methodology and their level of accuracy.
Polls. I guess I'm going to have to jump in just because Wisconsin Public Radio has partnered with the St. Norbert College
that
Survey Center for about 20 years, and it is they've had an independent analysis of their results,
mm-hmm.
and they were just recently named the premier survey center polling center for the state of Wisconsin. In terms of pre-election polling, the results, while not identical to the election results, are very close to the outcome. Like when the poll showed Governor Walker winning before his election.
Well, I hope that is the case. I know there aren't many domiciled polls in Wisconsin, so I'm glad to know that they're considered to be that dependable. My own reaction, as I reflect on things, we all have our own history and our own memory of things, but they more whatever that shows. Mm-hmm. I know, as I understand it, from some of the in-depth analysis of things, is that some women are getting upset not at Walker himself, but at the turmoil. Mm-hmm. At the controversy. I quite don't understand how Governor Walker, by taking action now, is the reason that everyone can go to the streets and create total disregard for other people's property, total disregard for the importance of respect to our Capitol building, for example, and all of the different things that has spawned. We now have people apparently really feeling there's some efficacy to and value to mob actions. So now we have all our Occupy protests, which are kind of tying off the tail of what happened here in Wisconsin and in several other states. So if that's their concern, confrontation is what they don't like. That's why they're going to decide they don't want to vote for Governor Walker. That, to me, is a very strange basis upon which to make a political, philosophical political decision in this case, because he did what people asked him to do. He's proving it in the results. Ohio just had their overthrow of their language by a referendum, but they also had a stay against any of that going into effect before that election, so they couldn't see what it meant, what it would do. We are seeing in Wisconsin what is happening, contrary to a lot of things that are said, certainly saying, as Ruth did, that there are some specific areas in the state, due to the fact that they are kind of out of the norm of how things are generally funded or things are generally considered, such as those small rural school districts, there will be some problems that must be attended to and must be addressed. But it's working.
Let me try to, because we have so many different issues to see. Ruth, kind of very briefly, you brought up the poll before, but you're not surprised by 58% wanting to recall Governor Walker in Wisconsin?
Well, I think it's great. Mm-hmm. I think what it shows is that those historic protests at the Capitol in the spring, which were such a surge of energy. And then if you were there, it just seemed ridiculous to claim that, you know, this was mob action destroying the Capitol. I mean, it was really your neighbors. It was firefighters. It was police. It was prison guards, teachers. You know, it was businessmen. It was people who had voted Republican. It was really quite a mix of people from around the state and really behaving themselves in such a civil and respectful way, and just having this incredible shot of the sense of citizen power and democracy that, you know, when that faded away and we had, you know, a little interim of lull there, you wondered...
A little normalcy, you might say.
Well, you wondered what it really meant. You wondered if that energy could be sustained, because one of the things that you felt when you went there was, this is our whole state, and this is people, you know, really saying, in the face of, you know, a very powerful, very highly funded opposition, no, we are going to stand up for what we believe our state is really all about. And what you see now is that the polls actually reflect that more Wisconsinites feel that way than did at the peak of those protests in the spring. Walker's numbers have gotten worse and worse. And, I mean, I think it's partly related to the fact that every month for the last 4 months, the jobs numbers in the state look worse and worse. So the whole idea that this is about job creation is kind of a joke. People are, you know, they're absorbing the impact of these cuts. You know, I mean, I saw some construction workers coming in to pick up petitions who have taken a real hit because of, specifically because of the collective bargaining issue and the fact that they took a $5,000 pay cut off of what was already not a very large income. I mean, you see,
are those state construction people?
City engineers.
Yeah, let me, Margaret Farrow, the state lost 9,300 private sector jobs in October. According to the jobs report out yesterday, that's not good.
Well, no, absolutely, and I think Governor Walker would be the first one to say that that's not good. When you look across the nation, we're still fortunately ahead of the nation in terms of what our unemployment rate is. We have, you know, 9%, I think, this month.
I guess 7.7 in October compared to 7.8 in September.
Okay, well, I knew it was in those high sevens somewhere. That is below the national average of unemployment rate. So we're at least maintaining within this very difficult international and national economy. We're kind of keeping our head above water. Are we growing as Governor Walker wants to? There are some very definite successes. We just had 400 jobs announced being added in the Racine area by Rude Lighting. There are things that are happening. There are also things that are still being swept along by construction in general. I mean, if the city engineers are upset or whomever, they ought to be in the private sector where they've been struggling since 08.
Well, you know what was funny about the Rude Lighting jobs, though, is Walker went down there to try to take credit for it, and he was surrounded by the employees holding Recall Walker signs. I mean, I don't think that they are giving him credit for these jobs. I mean, the governor is having a hard time, both because he's not creating the jobs he said he would create, and because people in the private sector, especially in the Milwaukee-Racine area where he is trying to personally tout the expansion of some of those companies, some of which are, you know, the job expansion has been due to the weather where, you know, some firms that make generators and other, you know, emergency supplies for places that have been hit hard by hurricanes have had a temporary bump in jobs. The governor shows up, he's surrounded by protesters. He's not making the sale here. And overall, you know, it's just not looking good.
Yeah, very briefly, Ruth Conniff, was it appropriate for critics of Governor Walker's to set up a rally and petition signing party in his neighborhood?
I think you should ask the four neighbors who set up the Recall Walker tables on their front lawns why that happened. I mean, when a guy is surrounded on four sides by neighbors who want to recall him and are inviting people to come out and sign the petition, I think it really tells you something. And I don't think that they didn't step on his lawn. You know, this idea that Walker is, you know, a victim, he's kind of like a king in his castle, you know, surrounded by the angry peasants.
The sad thing is that Walker doesn't live there. Walker's great parents and his children are there.
Well,
Walker himself, who should be the object of this, is not there regularly. He spends time there. That is not his home. I mean, it is such a double standard that if that was happening, I just can't imagine say with the Governor Doyle, if he had another home, because by choice his sons would like to complete their very last years in high school where they have spent their entire education, I would question if this would ever be done. I just think that that is going way beyond the pale. I don't think most of your labor unions would have done that directly, would have gone to that level. This is beyond reason. It really is.
Let me...
You know, this is a bunch of Wauwatosa folks coming out to sign...
No, they weren't. They had... No, they weren't. I'm sorry. I disagree.
But if the... Here's an email from Rebecca in Crawford County. Ruth, kind of, if you can respond to this. If the Madison School District has been experiencing cuts over several years, why only focus now on Scott Walker? I don't recall teachers marching on Jim Doyle's home or in Madison over those cuts. Is there a double standard when it comes to unions and how they react to Democrat cuts versus unions and how they react to Republican cuts?
Well, we just never saw these kinds of dramatic cuts before. I mean, this, you know, it's in an already strained budget environment. We're looking at the largest cut to public education in state history, and also this just direct attack on public employees and teachers, really, first among them. This idea that teachers are fat cats, that they make too much money and they get too many benefits to begin with, it really touched a nerve with people. And it's really what sparked the marches on the Capitol, was that, you know, it was a long-running segment on The Daily Show where you would look at a teacher and Jon Stewart would talk about, you know, isn't she such a fat cat? It's preposterous, especially coming from a governor who has raised so much money from corporations and who wants to hand out tax breaks to people who already have a lot of money, to then turn around and say that, you know, your kid's teacher shouldn't be getting away with making $50,000 and driving a used car. It's gross, and I think people see it for what it is. It's an attack on the great majority of us, and this is what connects the protests in Wisconsin to the Occupy Wall Street protests. People see this incredible inequality and the policies that support it, and they're saying no.
I don't think it's been that. I don't think the attacks have been on the teachers. I think the union and the union leaders have focused the attacks as though they're personal. Governor Walker has never, ever said anything against the teachers. He has said the union leaders who are suddenly seeing their automatic pay coming down through the state withdrawal out of their paychecks, that's suddenly not going to be there for them anymore. They're not going to have all the people in the big building up the street that looks out on the Capitol. They're going to be very limited, because now the teachers and their superintendent and their school board are the people together in each community who can develop, if they don't retain the union. They will develop their working rules. They will develop the manner in which they do what the ones I'm experiencing around my area, and I have teachers in my family, it's working very well. And I think to say that teachers were maligned and were ridiculed, I challenge that. I will ridicule the union leader who sits on the sidelines with the large paycheck. I don't know any teachers who are rich. I don't know any teachers who I would characterize as fat cats I don't recall, except in humor, and I didn't base my opinion on what was going on by the national humor shows or the talk shows. I base them on what was actually happening here in the state, and I think it's a great way to get a lot of emotion flowing, but it's a very erroneous representation of Governor Walker and the rest of our view on this.
I promise to take calls, and Chris in Waukesha is with us next. Hello, Chris.
Good morning. There's a few issues that I want to address, and please stop me if I overdo it.
Give us one good point, because we really...
All right. The one good point that started the whole conversation here is, one issue led to this whole thing. Well, don't belittle that issue. This is a huge issue, a big issue, has a huge impact on the whole state. So, please, let's not work on numbers. One issue. It's a huge issue.
The collective bargaining issue is a huge issue, is what you're saying, Chris. All right. I think, Ruth, kind of, if you agree with that, Margaret Farrow, you do not?
Well, no, I don't believe that the collective bargaining should kind of overturn the entire operation of state government. I think that collective bargaining certainly was something that we had in this state for a great number of decades, I would admit. Collective bargaining drove the cost of
everything we're doing in the public sector higher than we could afford, quite frankly, and that's why we haven't had a balanced budget for quite some time, and that is not healthy. You can say, well, we kept going. Well, we didn't keep going. It became more and more difficult to keep a decent bond rating so that any loans we had to take out were reasonable. It was a battle. It was an uphill battle. So I don't believe that we should be turning government out on the basis of that one issue. And over the years, federal employees don't have collective bargaining. All of our civil employees, our civil service employees in the state still have pages and pages of protection within their operation of their employment, because we have civil service to an extent of very, very refined way in which we conduct our business with our employees as a state of Wisconsin. So it isn't as though they have no protections or no places to turn if they feel aggrieved for any reason. So I don't think it's worth what's going on right now, and I think we ought to let it run for the number of years that Governor Walker's term is to be able to see what the state is really like when that period is finished.
Yeah, very, very briefly, Ruth, kind of why can't Governor Walker, why can't the election wait until 2014?
Well, that's one thing that people like Julie Wells say, we can't afford to wait. These cuts to our schools, this disempowerment of employees where you're telling them, even though you've accepted all of the pay cuts and all of the benefit cuts that are on the table, you can't come to the table anymore. We are going to dictate to you the terms of your employment. That is unacceptable. And people are really worried about what is going to happen with basically the looting of our state by Walker and his corporate cronies and the legislation that they have written at the ALEC convention out of state, where large corporations come together, draft model bills, and we're seeing them pop up in our Wisconsin legislature to privatize our schools, to do away with our environmental regulations, to strip pay and benefits from teachers and others. And you can say nice things about teachers, but, you know, when you take away $15 million out of Madison teachers' compensation in their last contract, you're really saying something about where we put our money in the state and what we value. And the concentration of wealth at the top and the destruction, really, of civil society, the fact that local towns can't maintain their local roads, but we're going to build a massive highway interchange in Milwaukee. You know, these are bad priorities, and people are not willing to sit and wait for years to see how much more damage Walker can do before they try to get him out of office and turn the ship. And I think that vote in Ohio really showed that despite the fact that we're going to see Americans for Prosperity pouring tens of millions of dollars into the airwaves here in Wisconsin and all the other groups, the citizens of this state can finally stand up and say no. And that's what's happening in Wisconsin. That's why 58% of Wisconsinites will vote for recall. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. It's we got to save our state now before it's too late.
Let me ask you, and again, I just sort of a yes or no here. Also this week, petitions were filed to recall four Republican state senators, in addition to Governor Walker and Lieutenant Governor Clayfish. Ruth Conniff, do you think those two will or must succeed?
I think that is going to be a big issue in those districts, in the same way that the Senate recall drives were over the summer. And, you know, there was, although the Democrats did not achieve a majority in the Senate, they whittled it down to a narrow one vote for the Republicans, and it's such a swing vote with Dale Schultz that it has really stalled a lot of the efforts that these senators were voting in lockstep for with Walker. I think it sends a clear message, and I think that it holds people accountable to the actual citizens of their district. And when you go to the hearings and you see people facing an outpouring from their own constituents saying, you've got to stop these cuts, we can't take this in our local community, I mean, I think that really holds people's feet to the fire, and I think that is a really important effort.
And how important is it, or Margaret Farrell, yes or no on these?
I guess I think it's very unfortunate that we don't let our government run in the way we have our electoral process set up. These are hardworking,
the three of the four senators had the nerve that are being recalled, had the nerve to suddenly have a Republican voted into office where there had been a Democrat for some time. I was not surprised at all at what was chosen, not because of who they are or some skullduggery they did, but that they are in a seat that the Democratic Party thinks is theirs. And for that reason, I think it's very unfortunate. I guess what I'm hearing Ruth say is anytime you're not happy with what's going on with whomever is in power, let's just have another election. That is not our American nor our Wisconsin way of running government. And I find it a terrific affront, especially in that you can have paid petition acceptors, the ones who are circulating the petitions. You can have non-residents of the state come in because they aren't getting enough of the residents, and they have to pay they don't have enough volunteers, and that this is true. Ruth can say that they have a lot of volunteers, no question about that, but not enough to get their 500,000 ones in terms of the governor's race. My concern is this should be Wisconsin. Recalls are there for the people of Wisconsin to be able to deal with what they feel is wrong with their government, not having paid union people coming in from all over with their great fist sign that reminds me of some another country, not America. These are supposed to be done. This is supposed to be a way for Wisconsin to get redressed for something. It's certainly not a way for the national union dollars nor out-of-state people coming in and really maneuvering it.
We are talking with Margaret Farrow. She is a former Republican lieutenant governor of Wisconsin. She's chair of Wisconsin Eye Broadcast Network. Her views here do not represent Wisconsin Eye. And Ruth Conniff is also with us. She is the political editor of The Progressive Magazine. Our two guests for this week's edition of the Week in Review. We spent pretty much the three quarters of the hour now on the recall effort that was launched this week against Governor Scott Walker. We're going to need to move on to some other issues in the news this week. A few more things happened as well, and we'll do that right after this. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's time now for the Week in Review quiz. This week, while visiting Australia, President Barack Obama received what he described as the most unique gift of his presidency. What was that gift? 1-800-642-1234 if you would like to take a shot at that, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. While visiting Australia this week, President Barack Obama said he received the most unique gift of his presidency. What was the gift? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll give you about 5 minutes to answer that question. We will randomly pick a winner from all of the correct answers, and you will have the opportunity to win a book from the many books that we featured on the program in recent weeks. Well, lots more to talk about. I'm wondering, since we just talked about President Obama's trip to Australia, if, Margaret Farrow, you have try to be as brief as we can now on this. Any comments on the U.S. Saying that we're going to put some troops, more troops in Australia? What do you think?
Well, I think that we have to be realistic about what we can do as a country, and we're apparently in his approach to realism, we're withdrawing troops from Iraq. The issue there, I think, is one that we need to have allies in critical parts of the country, in critical parts of the world, and I think we need allies where a large threat could be down the road, and I'm talking down the road. China has more people, more money, more productivity than any other country right now. Unfortunately, I think that includes ours. We have to be concerned. We have to keep relations as healthy as we can with them. But if it falters, I think we need to have friends in that area of the world. Mm-hmm. I don't have any problem with this at all. I don't know the details of it, but I would want to have Australia as an ally.
Mm-hmm. Ruth Conniff?
Well, it's intimidating to China, and that's the main thing about it. And now Obama has spent some time trying to reassure China, but also, you know, he's made a lot of comments about how the United States is a Pacific power, and you know, we're going to project force into the Pacific, and it's just, you know, it's not a strategy that our country can continue to maintain. We're not going to be able to be the empire that, you know, projects its troops all over the world, we are going to have to figure out how to live with the rest of the world in a different way. It's just, you know, economics. So it's, you know, it's not a winning, it's a very old and a, you know, time-worn way of doing business in the United States, but it's not a winning strategy, and we need to start to think differently.
Yesterday, the Occupy Wall Street protesters celebrated or observed the 2-month anniversary of the Occupy movement. There was a day of action, and protesters disrupted traffic and other things in many cities, including in New York, and there was in Milwaukee, the Occupy protesters occupied a bridge in Milwaukee, blocking traffic for several hours yesterday. This followed Occupy protesters being kicked out of their parks in New York and some other cities earlier this week. Ruth Conniff, where is the Occupy movement going? Is this the end of the Occupy movement or the beginning?
Well, it's certainly not the end, and I think Mayor Bloomberg in New York kind of gave the movement new life by clearing them out of Zuccotti Park. It caused this backlash, and, you know, we were talking to some friends in New York who were part of that outpouring, just hundreds and hundreds of people coming out in the streets, and I think they had the same kind of energy that we saw here in Wisconsin, just really excited to be in this huge, diverse crowd that was taking a stand against, you know, what they see as the collection of wealth in the top 1% of society and policies that are just gutting infrastructure and schools and sort of the basic idea of a middle class and a sustainable, you know, more equal society for the rest of us. So that's why they were on bridges in Milwaukee and Miami and Detroit and Boston talking about infrastructure. That's why they were, you know, outraged at the fact that the banks that were bailed out after making their bad investments have not been held accountable, that there have been no criminal prosecutions, that they can continue to do the same kind of self-dealing that triggered the whole financial collapse. I mean, and it's, I think the diversity of the crowd is really notable. I think the fact that this has spread not only nationwide from New York to Oakland, but also in London, there were protests on the same day. I mean, it's really too big to stop. And it's really something to see. I mean, there were, Arundhati Roy, who's a famous novelist from India, gave a speech that I was watching at the Occupy. I was watching online. It was at Occupy last night in New York, talking about how, you know, that gap between wealth and poverty is so dire in India and so visible in much of the rest of the world, and how moving it was to people there to see people in the United States talking about this same issue that they have been struggling with, that, you know, that equality and taking care of people on just a basic level is just such a powerful desire, and there's a worldwide movement behind it. And I think that's really, it's really inspiring.
Do you see this Occupy movement growing, Margaret Farrell?
I guess I'm not one that can really judge it, because I don't know, you know, I see a mob. I'm wondering where, it's kind of like we're a mob, who is our leader? Initially in New York, we had how many different issues suddenly being chanted and shouted by this side of the group or that side of the group? It was like, if you're unhappy, come to this setting and you can complain about the injustice that is being heaped upon you in your opinion. You are a victim, clearly. We have, I think, a group of victims in their minds to some injustice. Granted, I was the first to admit there's injustice in the world. I think there's always going to be, because we have people, and people are not perfect. We all have our faults. I think our society, on balance, as it is maligned constantly by Ruth and the people that she, you know, is part of and believes strongly with, see this as such a negative thing. I don't quite. I'm not saying I can't understand there are people with severe needs in this country, but when we see a group of victims who come together shouting against whatever they're upset about, will it grow? I don't know. With the 24/7 news cycle, they're certainly being given a good audience, and that's what they know. I mean, the group in Milwaukee last night chose a very visible bridge in which to put up tents and sit down for a while. Fine, they made a statement. Mm-hmm. Will that continue to grow? I cannot, but I quite frankly think there are much, much better ways that they could better their position that they would apparently like to have. And I think I would like to believe the American dream is still alive.
Let me ask you, Margaret Farrow, as we're running short on time, I wanted mm-hmm. to talk about the latest from the Republican presidential candidate campaign trail. And we saw Herman Cain flounder a bit on a question about Libya while talking to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel editorial mm-hmm. board. He's dropping some in the polls, and Newt Gingrich is rising to the top of the polls. How do you see this playing out?
Well, I think that we are seeing for the first time a very long debate season with a great number of candidates involved, something I've never experienced to this extent with this much exposure. Are the untested and the non-veteran to the public discourse kind of every now and then faltering? Certainly, no question that Herman Cain did. Has he had questions raised about his past, proven or not proven, or to be proven? Sure. Those things are going to happen. I personally thought this, and I believe our election cycles in this country are way too long, and I think there are ways to judge our candidates that don't go through all of this. I think there's still perhaps more to be seen. I don't know. I'm sitting on the sideline watching as I have always done.
Yeah, now that Newt is rising in the polls, Newt Gingrich, now he's facing criticism because he was a fairly highly paid consultant for Freddie Mac. Do you see this being another rise and fall story?
I guess on the right side of the middle, to the right side, he will be criticized. If this was someone on the left side, including our own, some of our present sitting and just retired senators who received advantaged loans from the same institution, that was discussed, there was a story, and it was dead. In the case now with Newt, it will be questioned for a while, I'm sure, because unfortunately he's a conservative, and those things are challenged to conservatives much more so than the other side.
Yeah, let me a quick lightning round on some other issues. Ruth Conniff, that congressional budget super committee may not reach a deal by next week's deadline. Are you worried?
Well, I think that it's really important that people realize that the Republicans on the committee, their condition that's a deal breaker for them is the permanent extension of the Bush tax cuts for the very rich, which is not deficit reduction, it's deficit enhancement. And so, you know, do I hope that the Democrats strike a deal in which they again cave on those tax cuts? No, I don't. I think, you know, this is really the wrong thing to be talking about, compromising on this, and that we need to just say we can't afford to give huge tax breaks to the very, very wealthy.
And Margaret Farrell?
I think that I didn't think the idea of a super committee was good to begin with. We have elected an elected body with appropriate committees to deal with these things. I personally think the Bush tax cuts didn't advantage only that 1% that is talked about and talked about. There is more benefit to the country as a whole from those, and I think that I stand, I guess, on my side with my side of the political thinking that we better look seriously at how not to cut off the hand that's basically feeding a lot of what goes on in the public sector, and that is the private sector who generates those revenues.
Margaret Farrow, Ruth Conniff, thank you both very much for being with us.
Thanks for having
me. Good to be with you.
Margaret Farrow, former Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, Ruth Conniff, political editor of The Progressive Magazine. Time now to reveal the winner and the answer to our Week in Review quiz question. This week, while visiting Australia, President Barack Obama received what he described as the most unique gift of his presidency. What was that gift? It was this.
In fact, I was just presented with the most unique gift I've ever received as president, crocodile insurance.
crocodile insurance. That's what he received while visiting Australia. Our quiz winner is Simon from Wisconsin Rapids. Thanks very much for playing, everyone. Simon will get his choice of books featured on the program in recent weeks. Thanks to Rob Ferret, to Bill Martins, and to Amanda Magnus for producing this hour and for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come, and I hope you will join us on Monday. We will talk about more about the latest news in the recall effort during our state capitol report Monday after 7. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.